Hey, hey, friendos. Welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping Solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Josaru, and with us this week, my alliance mate, my in-person con buddy, Astrodar. Astrodar, how are you doing?
I am doing really well. You know, just still recovering a bit from all of those games at the con.
Ah, well, we were just talking about our travels to get home, but yeah, so we, you know, very recently, kind of a week ago, got back from Con of Heroes 2023 and got to meet each other in person, which was delightful.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Played a crap ton of games with Baby Corn.
Yeah. It was weird seeing it finally, like, putting names to faces, or vice versa, putting faces to names and then having to remember their real names.
Yes, everybody has an alter ego.
Yeah, but it was good getting to actually, like, get in a ton of games of Marvel Champions, but two, also just getting in-person games with people that, you know, we've been chatting with for a couple years now on the...
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, a lot of the folks there don't play that many 3 or 4 player games. So we're just kind of really excited at the difference of that experience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like most of my games are either solo Champions League through solo or two handed. And so I was just loving having way more people at the table. And it's just so much less effort when you're not, you know, two-handed. You're thinking through two heroes.
Yeah.
These 3-4-player games, half the time, you don't even have to worry about the encounter deck because someone else is handling all that.
Somebody else is playing green? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually flipping over the cards and all that stuff. Yeah, that's right.
Both, on both counts.
But yeah, it's funny because there was a few games that we were playing villains I hadn't played a ton. You know, I had played through, I think, the entire Mutant Genesis box heroes maybe twice, and I had played only once through the Mojo campaign villains. Did I say heroes? I meant villains in both cases. But anyway, so there was aspects of those things I wasn't entirely, you know, burnt into my brain exactly how they operate, and I really had to force myself to pay attention if somebody else was operating the encounter deck in terms of what was happening and all that sort of stuff when I didn't quite have that deep familiarity with those villains.
Yeah, same. There were a couple games where, like one in particular, doing Sabretooth with a 4-player group, and Unicorn, who does the bot for the Discord.
Cerebro.
Yeah, Cerebro. So he was running the deck, and he is just like, man, he handles that, like flipping cards, getting things dealt. But I hit the point that our games were so going so fast that I was just like, okay, I've got 2 thwart, put it where it needs to go. Like 3 attack, put it where it needs to go. So yeah, it's funny, like hitting that balance of like running the game faster and being like, if you're not familiar with it, like being able to pay attention versus just like sometimes you almost disconnect from the game and you're just focusing on your deck.
Right. Did somebody put something in front of me that I have to deal with?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really neat experience. And I think, you know, for a lot of us who are also really used to building solo or two-handed decks, the deck building experience is also quite a bit different.
Yeah, it was interesting. I did a fair bit of deck building beforehand because I knew I was like, I'm just not like sure what to expect out of bigger games very often. And so, yeah, I did a fair bit of like asking people questions and whatever. But even once I got there, I was like, oh, there's a lot that you have to factor in. Or the number of times I sat down to a table where I was like, oh, someone else is running this card. Oh, it turns out my entire deck can't be on that card. Or things like that where it's like, you don't even think about that when you're doing solo because that's all handled on your end. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun to really kind of flex those deck building changes. You had some fun decks for multiplayer that I just don't think you'd be able to have run the same in solo.
So, I thematically, I mean, I didn't, not 100% of my decks were this, but I thematically was either playing Rocket decks or Voltron Ally decks. That was kind of, that was my thing. And so I had a bunch of leadership decks. I had one, and you played with me with this one aggression Voltron that was, you know, with Doctor Strange and giving Cosmo energy spears and all that kind of fun stuff. But there was some decks that, you know, really only worked if I could give other people at the table honorary Guardians or honorary X-Men or honorary Avengers to then give back to me during the game to then let my deck do stuff, because I didn't necessarily have those traits, but I needed access to them. So there was a lot of sitting down at the table and saying, you know, what are you playing? Oh, if you're playing that, can I give you two honorary Avengers for you to play on me later? And that was really fun. Everybody was really, really generous actually with me on that.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun to see. Like, my favorite of yours was the one where Adam Warlock was just loaded with cards, and just getting to not only trigger his like super efficient ability, but then just do everything else because he's finally a guardian, because that's my big pet peeve with
I
Adam
know.
Warlock not having a guardian on there, but finally a guardian, having the X-Men, having Avenger. Just like gets all the fun toys.
That one was really fun, and I actually ended up playing that one quite a few times because I was enjoying it so much. And that one was really neat because it's with Rogue, and because it's with Rogue, you can get the faction traits you need off of playing your own allies that have the faction traits, which gives you a window of opportunity to then play the honorary whatever you need, honorary guardian or whatever cards. However, if I can get somebody else at the table to do those things for me, it takes quite a bit of setup time away from having to hit those windows with honorary guardians and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. But
So,
did you have any of like favorite games while you were at the con?
well, I mean, I think you were there for the thing that was probably just made me laugh the hardest. Highlight is where I was playing a Hone Technique dive bomb deck with Rocket, and we were playing against that was the Mojo one, right?
That was Mojo. Master Mold was in before that. So yeah, that was the Mojo one.
That was Mojo, and then had some huge minions at the table, and I managed to start the turn, I think, with two dive bombs, and because he's Rocket, every time he does excess damage, he gets to draw cards, and there was tons of minions at the table. So I was able to dive bomb, get a whole bunch of cards from excess damage, do another dive bomb, drew into, you know, another attack event, and then a third dive bomb, and it was, you know, I don't know how much damage it was at the table. We didn't actually count carefully, but it must have been 100 and change from Rocket's nonsense. It was amazing.
That was fun to see, and just like the setup could not have been better with just how many minions were out, having the dragon on the board, and just like drawing into everything. That was funny. I liked that one.
And I think my other highlight was, just for a ridiculous thing, was when you and I were playing against Magog.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites as well. Because so you were running Star Lord, and who was I running? I actually don't remember who I was running at the time. I think that was
You
Ironheart.
weren't the one that died, so.
Yes, I was. Mine was not the memorable part. But it turns out that Armadillo can actually pack a pretty decent punch that you're not allowed to block.
Yeah, that was a really neat sequence of events. I had never played with Armadillo before.
Yeah, me either, actually. I thought I had, but once I was glancing through when I was logging the play, I was like, oh no, I guess I've never played with them. But it was pretty funny because the setup was you put Clarity of Purpose on you, which is just like the perfect Star-Lord shooting himself in the foot. Clarity of Purpose, use a resource, puts you down at 4 health. Then I bring out Armadillo, or the attachment in Armadillo's kit that brings him out if he's not already out. And then you flip the armadillo attacks you and you can't defend it, and just being like, oh, I guess that is game over. And it was only like round like a two or three. Then we reset and beat it and had a good time there. But that was one of my favorite games just because of some of the ridiculousness there.
Yeah, no idea that he was actually going to be able to attack you and nobody could do a thing about it.
Same. Yeah, I like had no clue. It was a fun surprise. Fun being relative.
Right.
But yeah, that one was one of my favorites. And then the last game I played at the con was with Baby Corn and Andy Quinn. And we played Mysterio, which on point for this episode. We nice. Played Mysterio with the Reavers. And oh boy, did that get out of hand. Because the Reavers all have the teamwork trait. So when one of them comes out, all of them activate. And yep. we just had this flip where tons and tons of them came out. I think we had four on the board. No, maybe, I think we had five by the end of that turn. But it just so happened that turn was the one turn I played Gopher Champions in my Ironheart deck. And so it ended up like we survived that and then lost a scheme a couple rounds later because it just spiraled out of control. But it was just really fun having that like really high pressure scenario. So yeah, actually my two favorite games of the con were the ones that I lost now that right. I think about it.
Yeah, I get I totally get it. The yeah, I mean, that was the other thing that's interesting is, you know, a bunch of these modulars that have teamwork or other things that have lots and lots of synergies. In solo, you just don't usually see the cards pile up to the point that you really feel those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's there are a lot of them that are like, okay, this is dangerous if it comes out, but it's rare that you're going to see multiple at one time.
Yeah.
But
in yeah. multiplayer,
it's surprising how many times you'll go through a deck in multiplayer. Like, I think yeah. that was one of those things I just like wasn't wholly prepared for. Was like, oh yeah, we big bad guy taken care of. Oh, he's back a turn later because we've already cycled through the deck.
Yeah.
So it was fun though. I had a lot of fun at the con. It was just fun getting in games in a totally different style than I usually play.
Right. And then as is the usual for those kinds of things, you know, you develop some new relationships and then are looking forward to getting to see those people again in a year.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a fun one, getting to meet all the people that we've been talking to online, and then two, yeah, meeting some new people that there was a big con. I was surprised. I still managed to not even run into all of the solo champion league players that that showed up. But yeah, it was fun just meeting some new people we get to hang out with next year, getting to meet people we've been chatting with for a while. Definitely would recommend anyone going to the con that can make it out.
Fully agreed. And then I hope some folks had a chance that maybe didn't go to be able to play with some of the print and play stuff, because I really had a lot of fun with the custom things and, you know, just doing kind of like solo champions, like just doing things that aren't ones that you would make the choices on your own necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those custom sets were a lot of fun. And some of it really just leveraged that we were in a big multiplayer event. But I think there's a lot of fun for solo stuff there too. So definitely worth checking out. Even if you don't want to print them off, they are on Tabletop Simulator. So you can go put them there.
It would be good to check in with the Octagon folks to see about getting some of those custom standard sets in there, because the one mm-hmm. you know, I think I really enjoyed the one from this year because it did a lot of interacting with your Nemesis set. So it would bring your Nemesis minion into play, or bring your Nemesis side scheme into play, or use a random card from your Nemesis as a boost card so that it would get shuffled, you know, back into the encounter deck once you do the reshuffle and things like that. So we ended up seeing a lot more of those sets than we normally do, which is great, because I think that's a bit of a missing part of the game.
Agreed. Yeah, they did a really good job with that design and that focus. Like, it felt really focused around the Nemesis set, and it was fun seeing them a lot more and having to deal with them more, just because like usually Shadows flips, you know, splashes out their kit and then you take care of them one turn, never see him again. But it was fun having this, especially something else fishing them out. Yeah, and solo for sure. In solo, you know, you pull shadows and then you throw it to the side and grab a different card, right? With me.
You groan.
Yeah, you know, you groan, smack your head on the table a bit, and because it's turn one and that's the last card you needed.
Classic.
Yeah.
All right. Let's check in about what this round is. So we're a little bit overdue because we had a con in the middle and all that other sort of stuff, but we're talking about season 14, round 5. So the culmination of the No More Avengers season. And the thing that happened is we were pitted up against Mysterio with the required personal nightmare modular, and then an optional modular was symbiotic strength. And then there was two pools of heroes. So there was a bunch of non-Avengers. If you chose the non-Avengers, you played on expert. So you could choose Ironheart, Venom, Spider-Ham, or Rogue according to the faction that you had chosen to play for that season. And then whichever aspect you wanted, and then the deck building constraints of no cards with the Avenger trait, no cards that had or required your faction trait, which was a interesting twist that was pretty tricky. And then at least three cards with one of the other faction traits. So maybe we'll get into those deck building things in a moment. And then, or you could choose one of four Avengers to play. So basically, Wanda has wished away all of the Avengers, and there's a way to bring them back by a whole bunch of people playing Avengers and taking on the exact same scenario, but with Standard 2, Expert 2. So
I would.
that was a neat setup. How did that color your decision making?
Well, I was definitely not in that second group because I have a personal vendetta against Standard 2. But I loved the setup because, first off, this whole season was great with having to make that early choice of which faction you're going to use and locking you into some hero choices. So it was fun getting to the end of this. And having arguably some of the most powerful heroes from those factions as your choice, but then also getting this totally unconstrained option to play some Avengers that just at a s higher difficulty. And yeah, I think if it hadn't been for the con being right around the corner and me wanting to test some other decks for that, I probably would have dabbled up into Standard 2, Expert 2. By myself, stuck with Spider-Ham, which was a lot of fun, but I loved the setup and having so many options.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I have a distaste for Standard 2 in solo. I actually think I played Mad Titan Shadow all the way through as three player with Standard 2, Expert 2, and there the things get distributed just enough that it actually felt like it worked pretty well. You know, it wasn't ridiculous, but in solo, the way things can pile on just doesn't quite feel all that great.
Yeah, I could see how in a multiplayer that eases it up to just kind of right level.
Well, and it's almost like something like the Infinity Gauntlet that is just like a way to bump up the difficulty just a bit, you know, kind of having you know, something that is just one. This isn't exactly the right example, but you know, one extra encounter card for the table per turn, or you know, things like that. That's not the per player level, but it's at more at the table level. So you're kind of seeing those surges, but they were spread out enough. It was very feasible, and you kind of got to see how nasty some of these things could be. You really, you know, what's neat about Standard 2 is there's boost effects that are going to give things overkill, and you really have to consider that when you're choosing how you're going to block things.
Yeah. Oh, that seems interesting. I'm gonna have to try now that I'm like a little more motivated to do some multiplayer games. I'll have to try and dial in some standard too.
Well, I think especially if you're playing, you know, maybe some of the older boxes or something like that, you know, Rise of the Red Skull, which with the current card pool and heroes, you know, is probably relatively easy on expert compared to when it came out, you know, kind of cranking that up with Expert 2 is probably a great way to have a bit of a different experience with it.
Yeah, no, it sounds like fun. Which I didn't think I'd say about Standard 2.
Yeah, I do actually, I don't know if I entirely advocate for it, but I think that's where it has a great place. I think it's, you know, if you want to crank up the difficulty a little bit in that environment, I think that's a good lever you can actually turn. So let's dig into what kind of a little bit we need to know about Mysterio and Personal Nightmare for folks who haven't dealt with it for a while or that played their games almost 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, so Mysterio, his big thing is that he's going to be taking encounter cards and putting them into your player deck, which later on will come back to haunt you, and that you'll have to deal with them later. But his main thing, so we're doing expert, so looking at stages 2 and 3, his big way of putting cards in are that if a card, one of his boost cards from his activation, has the illusion trait, then it gets put into your deck. During stage 2, it gets put on the bottom, so you don't have to deal with it for a while. Stage 3, it gets put right on the top, though, so it's going to be a more pressing issue. And then beyond that, the rest of his actual kit, most of it is illusions.
Yep.
With a few exceptions, Deja Vu is one of his big cards, because that one puts itself in your deck, and so it'll be just cycling, and you'll see it a whole bunch. And then Shifting Apparition is a 1-health minion that has guard, but if you overkill it at all, deal excess damage, then you are going to have to shuffle in an encounter card into your deck. And so those are like the big hitting pit parts of his hit. But then he also, you do Personal Nightmare with him as well. That's one of the require mods. And you have a few more illusions in here, and you have the evil doppelgangers, which are pretty beefy minions. They have 5 HP, and they get a boosted attack and scheme based on the number of identity-specific cards in your hand. And so they're not something you want to sit out, because they can actually hit pretty hard. And then Fool's Paradise is kind of the other big card to highlight here. It's a victory card, so once you deal with it, it's gone forever. But each identity, in this case just the one person, gets +2 hand size. Great, love that. But it has a crisis icon, an acceleration icon, and a hazard icon. So for me, I love this card because it just sits that perfect spot of like, do I let this sit out? Like, I can see a reason why I would, or do I deal with it right away? And so I love this card, but it can also really become problematic if you do let it sit too long or misjudge how much in control of the game you are. So it's just a really fun hit with Mysterio, putting stuff into your counter deck, causing cards to come out that you have to deal with later, maybe not right away. Some of them are small effects, but they build up over time. It's just a really fun way for the encounter deck and player deck to interact that we don't see anywhere else.
Yeah, agreed. And we saw, you know, friend of the show, Jarrett, was frustrated with not always recognizing the illusion cards and remembering to put them in, and, you know, put a bunch of red tape over top of the text box to really highlight that. So, you know, the discussion that Jarrett and I had last episode was, I think the designers did a really poor job of making sure that the illusion were highlighted to the player to the point that it was just dead obvious that it was a card that needed to go into your deck when it got revealed.
Yeah, that is actually, there's a lot of upkeep on this where so many times I would have to like go back and be like, oh wait, was that an illusion card? Did I have to put that on top of my deck? Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that's probably like my least favorite part about it, is just the amount of upkeep that this scenario has. And I realize I said we don't see this anywhere else where cards get mixed into your deck. Mystique actually does that as well, but she does it in a horrible, mean way, whereas Mysterio somehow doesn't feel quite as aggressive.
Well, and interesting, if you have Mystique in with the Mysterio and villain, the Mystique cards actually kind of get neutered a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But anyway, so like, what's your overall opinion on Mysterio?
It's one that, going into it initially, when it was previewed, I didn't think that I would like at all, just because there's so much tracking, extra shuffling. Just like, it seemed like there was a lot of upkeep.
Yeah.
And in the end, though, I really enjoyed it. Like, it's just a scenario where it kind of hits the same notes as Star-Lord for me. Like, you can do a lot of things, but you're going to pay for them later.
Right.
And you have to really gauge, am I letting this drag out too long to where I'm going to actually have to see the consequences of my actions? Or is this something that I can, like, put something off, and let that kind of suspense and problem build for later? So I ended up really loving it.
And it actually introduces a neat decision point, where often, you know, if you have the choice to finish off your player deck and draw the extra encounter card, or maybe hold one of your cards at the end of the turn so you don't quite draw up to do that. You know, I think Mysterio actually encourages you to finish off your deck so that you now have a big deck again sitting in front of you, so that if you do get any more cards, they're going into a big deck instead of this tiny little deck with only one card.
Exactly, right? Because once you like hit that and you start seeing all of these orange backs just start piling up with your like one or two blue cards, you're like, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, well, and there's going to be a bunch of neat stuff. You know, Domino has a bunch of effects that discard player like cards off your deck, and so those interact. They, you know, you still have to take the card, but it actually lets you draw an extra card when you're playing against Mysterio. So things that are discard effects, you know, do have kind of a net benefit, as opposed to if you just drew into the card instead, you know, you end up getting an extra card. So there's kind of some neat, I think there's some neat to say the player decisions that end up showing up because of how they designed this.
Agreed. And it's along those lines, one of my favorite is more hacking versus decisions in the game rather than it's like actually deck building, but taking cards like Clea and things like that, that give you an opportunity to shuffle your deck, because you then have that choice of like, okay, there's nothing really coming up. And so maybe I just let, and I know there's a bunch of orange like encounter cards on the bottom of my deck. So if I shuffle Clea in, I'm risking that, versus, you know, when you're stacking them up on top on stage three, and you know the next thing you have to deal with is a bunch of encounter cards, letting her, you know, be defeated, shuffling your deck and buying yourself some extra time. And like, there's just lots of fun ways to interact with it.
Yeah, agreed. And so there's interesting deck building opportunities, but also kind of in-game decisions and stuff like that. Yeah, I actually think this is a villain I quite enjoy. I'm surprised how much I enjoyed it in Solo Champions League, because it can be pretty high variance. I think one of the things that's also a bit of a saving grace of it is, for the most part, his encounter cards are not that high impact. So it's more about the fact that when they show up as an illusion, they go into your deck, and then they show up and get kind of this other effect. And so you're often getting hit by more encounter cards than usual, but they're not quite as impactful as usual. So it doesn't feel as unfair as it could.
Exactly. They're pretty mild, and they almost all offer you a choice of how to handle them. Like the shifting apparitions.
Yep.
If you want to deal with it to try and save yourself some hassle later, you can, or just take it out because it's easy to get rid of. Deja Vu gives you the choice of taking damage or threat. There's almost always some option that really mitigates, you know, the feel bads of something hitting you too hard.
Right. Yeah. I do actually really appreciate that. And you know, we're encountering that right now. We're playing against Taskmaster, and there's another thing where you can decide on, you know, taking the damage or taking the extra threat on the main scheme at the start of your hero turn. And yeah, those player choices are juicy.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So the other modular was Symbiotic Strength, which I just happen to have in my hand. And so this is one of the modulars that, when you're first playing through Sinister Motives, is in the Venom encounter. And so you've got a bunch of enraged symbiotes, which are these two health minions with guard and patrol, and they have a boost effect that pulls them out when they show up. So kind of more things interacting with boost effects, not just illusions, but other things that maybe encourage you to figure out ways to take fewer boost cards if you can, because there's quite a few boost effects in this set as well. And then kind of one of those neat ones that I just also wanted to highlight is Swinging Assault, which is a treachery that if it's revealed when you're an alter ego, you have to change to hero form and then the villain attacks you.
Yeah, that one can get mean if you forget that it's in the deck.
Yeah.
Like your flipping down is no longer like, okay, I can flip down to avoid things. It's like, no, I need to be able to take an attack even when I flip down. But add some spice, that's for sure.
I really enjoy kind of that sort of thing. So yeah, I enjoyed the overall scenario. I enjoyed the mix of things that we saw. And I also enjoyed not playing Standard 2.
Agreed, same.
All right, so let's check in with our actual rounds. So Astra, what were you actually up to this round?
So I was the Web Warrior faction for this group, and that was a conscious decision, knowing Kana Heroes was at the end. I was like, I think I can like handle Web Warriors. I've been building a lot recently anyway. And so then once it kind of became a little more clear that Ham was likely to be the one at the end, I was just like, yes, like that is a way to end it because he's super strong. So I did. The best part of my deck building was naming the deck. This was my Reporpoise deck, Repurpose Ham, and it was pretty straightforward. Just used basically a bunch of your good protection stuff, some readies to work with Repurpose and energy barriers to get your damage and stuff up, and then using Defiance to deal with those boost icons. And that was the key bit. And then the first time I played, I had a bunch of allies that actually didn't fulfill the deck building thing. I didn't have any Web Warriors, but I also forgot to include relevant factions in, so I had to replay my games with some new with Starhawk and Polaris added in. So just some inexpensive, good allies, a bunch of readies, and ways to boost damage, and then some healing to boost up Ham. But they went pretty well. I went 8-7-5 turns. They were all clean. My health could have been better on a couple of games, but by the time I was playing them for the second set, I was just like, I'm ready to be done. And so it was good though. It was gave me a better appreciation for Ham, and he is a lot of fun to play. Just being able to build up those resources, especially and Deja Vu. When that card, because it offers you the choice to take one damage, which is pretty much like, hey, do you want a free resource every time you see this card? And getting that cycling in your deck was actually really nice. It wasn't something you were avoiding, so it was fun to play.
Well, and then something we saw, and we'll get to this when we're talking about decks, but something we saw from somebody else in the community was just talking about leaving Shifting Apparition on the table. Although it has guard, it has one attack, and you can just let it attack you each turn again, kind of like your Deja Vu to build up your resource counters, your toon counters.
Yeah, that was super clever, and I wish I had done that. Because it was like once I said it, that was Wayner 21, and he. But once they said that, I was like, that is right there. Like they're feeding you free resources right from the get go, and no, it was really clever to take advantage of that. But yeah, I think Ham was really poised well to handle this scenario. I think that showed in the results, which we'll get to later, but it was nice to kind of be able to close out around just, really chill.
Really chill. Well, I played Justice Rogue, play specifically Shield, because the thing, you had Defiance to try to avoid some boost cards. I thought that the Justice Shield, your Global Logistics would be a great way to kind of stack the deck so that the boost cards I had were ones that weren't illusions, and so I could just kind of make sure. Or to get, confuse the hero or the villain, of course, but to make sure that I wasn't getting a bunch of illusions. And, for the most part, that was actually pretty reasonable. Being able to just really avoid getting, I would usually only end the game with one or two cards sitting in that thing, or some of the games I only ever got two, maybe three cards in the deck the whole time.
Oh, nice. So I was wondering, with Global Logistics, did you ever use it on your player deck to generate extra card draw or anything like that?
No, that was one of those ones that somebody brought up after I had played. I was like, oh, yeah, that's really clever, too.
It's one of those, like, it's really solid when you can influence the encounter deck. But the fact they have leave that option open for the player deck makes for, you know, I haven't seen anyone really use it until now. Because, yeah, I forgot that they had mentioned they used it on player deck. It's cool that that option's open.
Well, especially, you know, an interesting point is going into the last turn, that's where you can generate some extra card draw and stuff like that too, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, you're not going to care that you see those encounter cards actually dealt to you.
Or it also means that you could make some pretty amazing Star-Lord versus Mysterio decks.
Oh. I'm going to try that now. That sounds like a lot of fun. Oh, man.
So, yeah. So, you know, like this was one of those ones where some of the good ideas showed up a little bit after. But I was like you, Astrodar. I played all my games and then I realized I was playing on Octagon and I realized that I was doubling up on Personal Nightmare because I was adding it and it was already being added by default. And so I was seeing an awful lot of evil doppelgangers.
They're everywhere.
Ironically, I replayed all my games and got the exact same turn average.
Oh, nice. So consistent.
I was consistent. So, you know, independent of which path I chose, I still ended up getting the exact same, which, you know, that kind of feels the best, right? If you make a mistake and replay it all and it just kind of turns out the same way, you're like, okay, great.
Yeah, agreed.
And I've also had the experience of having to replay the games for a variety of reasons and kind of just getting to a point where I'm frustrated and not actually finishing the round. So I'm glad I figured it out at a time where I had some time to actually do it and the subsequent games weren't frustrating. So it was good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Overall results you alluded to. So, you know, a lot of these decisions were based on which factions people had already chosen ahead of time. So we saw Rogue at 35%, Ironheart at 20%, Spider-Ham at 19%, and Venom at 7%. So those were, again, the faction-specific heroes. And then, you know, for a total of 19% of the folks, we have a bunch of Avengers as well. So, you know, a goodly number of people, roughly 1 in 5, actually chose these, and they were actually spread out across Captain America, Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, at roughly 5% each. Thor was 4. So that's, you know, pretty remarkable that many folks were like, yes, I'm absolutely going to take on Expert 2, Standard 2, Expert 2 with these Avengers and go for it. And we saw people that were brave enough to do Hulk, which was amazing.
Yeah, it was funny watching the deck building and brainstorming going on for Hulk. Just because I was like, someone's enjoying it, apparently. But
didn't they start with Basic Hulk?
They did, and that's that was where it cracked me up the most, because they were just like, we're just going to go all out. Basic Hulk, Standard 2, and they did a good job. I think that was Freeze-Dried Strahd that did that one, and it was fun watching them deck build during that.
Right. And then, although we have tons of choices of heroes, it was a lot of people were actually locked into either kind of choosing their faction hero or choosing one of the Avengers heroes. So we all had the choice of aspects as well. And we saw 32% protection, 33% justice, 23% leadership, and 12% aggression. I don't know if I've ever seen leadership kind of that low relative to the other ones when it was a full aspect selection.
Yeah, I was wondering how much of that factored into like... Well, no. I was going to say there's a few heroes that just really feed into protection well in this set. Spider-Ham, namely. Mm. Ironheart does really well with that. But Spider-Ham can also run leadership really well. And it's surprising to see so many people go protection and justice over top.
Mm-hmm. And then finally we saw, in terms of the main scheme, we saw 30% of the games go to stage two of the main scheme.
Nice. That's not too bad.
Not too bad. You know, this was a tough matchup. No, I can't remember which version of it I was playing. It wasn't when I was playing Rogue. I was playing something else, but I was trying out some other combinations, and I definitely lost to this scenario a couple times in my practice.
Yeah, I think especially if you're jumping up into the standard two set, there's plenty of opportunity to be getting pushed over into the second stage or to lose by getting hit. But even the original, like the first four, even with how strong they are, there was plenty of ways for this scenario to get out of hand. And so, yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. There was definitely some difficulty here.
Right. And then, as you mentioned, Spider-Ham's really powerful and actually was kind of the highest performing of all the heroes. 100% win rate, 102 approval rating. Again, approval rating of 100 is usually kind of the upper tier of the types of approval ratings we typically see. So Spider-Ham having an average over 100 is really high. Mm-hmm. But also 100% win rate is also, you know, especially on a round five, is also exceedingly high. And then Venom was kind of right behind, also 100% and 99.6% approval rating. And then we saw Rogue, and then Ironheart, and then our Avengers. So Thor was actually the highest performing of the Avengers. Might not have been what I would have guessed. I don't know about you.
No, certainly not. I'm surprised. I would have thought Captain America and Iron Man would be the much higher for the win rates.
Yep. And so, you know, Iron Man and Captain America had 67% win rates and approval rates of 79.9 for Iron Man and Captain America, 76.2. You know, there's, and a lot of those approval ratings, of course, if you get a loss, your approval rating is quite a bit lower. So when it's 2/3 of the games are wins and 1/3 are losses, those approval ratings are going to be quite a bit down. But I certainly wasn't brave enough to try Iron Man in Standard 2 Expert 2.
Me either. Although there are some cool decks, like Jarrett's deck looks pretty cool. Yeah. We'll get to his in a bit, but it always impresses me, see the deck building people can do, and then on top of that, being able to pilot it, because I could take these decks and not always, like,
yes.
There's a lot of decision-making that goes into actually playing the decks once you get into the game, and so it's cool to see these scores.
Yep. And then Protection and Leadership ended up being the top performing of the aspects, and then nobody actually ended up taking Basic.
Don't blame them.
and Aggression could have did the worst overall, even though Justice actually had a worse win rate. The approval rating, which is combining a whole bunch of other stuff like the villain, health, and all those other things, was slightly worse for Aggression than for Justice, even though Aggression had a slightly higher win rate than Justice. So Protection and Leadership were kind of the two top choices, but of course that depends on your hero and all sorts of other things, right? We know Thor, for example, is just at his best in Aggression.
Mm-hmm.
But anything with energy, with lots of energy, can also be pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting to look, to see the breakdown, because, you know, usually there's not this many heroes available at one time. And so it did feel, throughout the deck building and sharing results and stuff, less... There wasn't quite the same shared experience that a lot of round fives end up with, where everyone's really struggling against it. Because people playing Spider-Ham just weren't having the same struggles as people playing Hulk and stuff. But I think it was fun. But there wasn't quite the same focused experience that everyone was having. So it's interesting seeing all these scores reflect that with wild variance.
Yeah, the camaraderie within the league felt quite a bit different. And even because people could be playing different aspects with Spider-Ham, you weren't even kind of necessarily in the same boat as somebody else playing Spider-Ham.
Exactly. Yeah.
If I was to levy a criticism on this season, because I did really enjoy it overall, and the deck building restrictions and the narrative and all those other pieces, I think it was that it kind of didn't quite have the same level of community or camaraderie because people could be making such different choices. They just didn't have the same shared experiences.
Yeah, I felt that we still had it through some of our, through the aspect choice rounds where everyone had a set hero, or I guess that the previous one, because there were only two. But then on the pick your hero, it was just kind of like wider out, and then to close it all out, just have so much variation.
Yeah,
I agree. But again, the season as a whole, I loved, and I really loved the narrative and that early faction choice. It was just kind of this last round that wobbled a little bit in terms of just the chat on the Discord, not even the gameplay or scoring or anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the round. I ended up playing it a crap ton of times because I had to replay it all, and it was good fun. And yeah, I really got to like Rogue and kind of see some of the subtleties of what she can do, which was also really neat because that was my first time really interacting with her. So spent quite a bit of time with her before I was actually ready to play my games.
Very nice. Let's take a look at some decks.
Yeah, please. So we got Spider-Ham, as we said, kind of top performer, and Wayner, who you already mentioned, coming out of Flight 3, had the top overall score, had a deck with 10 allies, which is... might have been the largest number of allies we saw. So that would be the Triskelion award for most allies, party at the Triskelion. And kind of, you know, spoke about some of the things you already said. Clarity of Purpose is just this card that is just heavenly for Spider-Ham. Take a damage, get a resource, and then actually get another resource because of it.
Yeah, it's just such a perfect card for him.
And then, as we mentioned, Wayner had talked about leaving the Shifting Apparitions out to get some more resources, so really being able to hit the ground running.
Yeah, super clever play there.
And then, another friend of the pod, T. Eberly, 14th of their name, also coming out of Flight 3 out of the Bears, and it was playing Protection with Spider-Ham. So Wayner was playing Leadership, obviously, when I mentioned Clarity of Purpose, and then Doxologos, also coming out of Flight 3, playing a Leadership one with 11 allies, so even more than Wayner. And the deck was called Spider-Ham, Leader of the X-Men, so lots of X-Men allies.
It's been fun running a set of X-Men allies across different heroes, not just like the X-Men ones. So this deck looks fun to play.
It's so hard because there are a few trait locked ones, and unlike Web Warriors, you can't. It's not if you have an X-Men or mutant in play; it's if your hero is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a bit. You don't have access to everybody. Web Warriors make you really work to get the Web Warriors, some of the Web Warriors out, but you can still do it. X-Men are just kind of you don't have access. Sorry.
Yeah, Web Warriors are definitely more splashable as like a set across heroes, but there's still enough solid X-Men heroes. You can run a decent set in an ally deck. But
yeah, good. And then they made, you know, the mechanism that they used, because they typically use kind of for different factions, different ways that these things work for the X-Men. The most common thing seems to be that the ally costs one fewer if you have the mutant or X-Men trait. So they're much more efficient to include in a deck if you're using that kind of hero, but it's not exclusively restricted.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still useful. But
which I actually would make that my preferred way that they would do it, right? That you make the things more expensive. But if you have good reason to want to include it, you still have access.
Yeah, I like it as a way to balance and cost things, because the Web of Life of Destiny is the same way, where you can pay for it or it's free as long as you're a Web Warrior. So I think it's a good way to kind of limit things without totally blocking it out.
Yeah. I think it's been definitely my preferred way to do faction restrictions overall, but I do like that there's some different approaches, but I think that's kind of my favorite one overall. Then Venom, we saw Rekatul from Flight 1 with a protection deck, which was kind of stun lock deck, and Venom's already kind of got some of that action going on, so just kind of leaning into that a little bit further, because protection also has access to those effects. Moogie, maybe is how you pronounce it, from Flight 4 with protection deck, a Venom, and then and finally, Zero Sade, Flight 2 with Justice, so one of my Justice buddies. And, you know, this has got Defiance just like you had from Mugi. Yeah, noticing clever things like you.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because I was saying, well, I wasn't exactly sure why Protection was so big. I was thinking right. Spider-Man initially, but no, it's because of Defiance and Stuns. Because yeah. both of those are easy ways to get rid of all of those illusions getting added to your deck. So, yeah, I can definitely see why so many people were taking Protection.
Right, first time I put Mockingbird in a deck in ages.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was playing Shield, so she's Shield traded, but, you know, like, I would have put her in probably just to get that extra stun effect. And then Rogue, we saw 83 out of Flight 2 with Leadership, doing a Web Warriors Leadership Rogue. Very fun. 12, what did I say? 12 gray allies here. Although it's a Leadership deck, there's only four, so... Astrodar, so jealous. There's only four leadership cards in here. One last stand and three make the calls. Make the calls a great way to get around faction blocking.
Exactly. It's sometimes I wonder how that was a core set card. But it was it's really, really clever way to work with different factions. And I think that this one looks like a lot of fun. Although we don't want to go down the list anymore. How many allies can people add? 12?
Yeah, 10, 11, 12. Okay, we'll see if somebody, anyway. And then I got second and Vaughn got third, both of us using Justice deck. So like I said, I used a Shield deck, really tried to lead into Global Logistics and kind of all the good stuff that just have some nice control over the game. I really like kind of how Justice became a different version of a control deck in this game, mm-hmm. right? It was usually just Protection before, but it's bringing a different kind of, you know, manipulation of the encounter deck type stuff.
Yeah.
And then we go over to Ironheart as the lowest performing of the non-Avengers heroes in Kamehameha out of Flight 2 with a Justice deck with Agent Coulson, two target acquires, but no counterintelligence, which is interesting. Three Sonic White Rifles, one under surveillance, so really trying to keep that main scheme locked down. Lots of confuse effects, stuff like that. Got Professor X in there.
Nice. Yeah, target acquired's another one of those. Just get rid of those. Boost effects. There's enough bad ones in there. Yep. It still doesn't block out your illusions, but there are enough bad effects that it's definitely worth taking.
Yeah, and I don't know if you had a chance to play with Kamehameha at the con, but they were also there and I had a chance to play a game.
Yeah, no, they were one of the ones that I somehow just never crossed paths with. Right, and so I'm going to have to grab them next year.
Kikita Jamie in Flight 4 got second with a Justice deck, and then 2D out of Flight 3 got third with a Protection deck. And was kind of 2D was focusing on, you know, reducing the damage while getting the progress counters, right? So the big thing about Ironheart is just kind of this race game of trying to get your progress counters going so that you are up to full strength as quickly as possible. Kind of like Iron Man, but totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a clever way to do it, of just basically getting in that damage reduction, kind of waiting that out and while you build. And then looks like there's some really good, you know, readies and stuff in here, ways to deal with it. Nice. And yeah. I think that one
you know,
good.
That was another thing I really noticed is you could really take some early punches from Mysterio and not worry about it too much.
Yeah, he doesn't hit super hard as a whole. It's just once it's dragged on a bit is when you're suddenly, you know, not wanting to deal with it. Well, I say in Standard. Standard 2 definitely has some cards that are going to make that problematic. But no, he doesn't hit too hard. And so you really can, yeah, take a couple to face.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a death by a thousand cuts sort of thing, right? Next thing you know, you've taken a bunch of deja vus and a bunch of other stuff and you're realizing your health's really low, but it was no individual thing that really did it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's what I lost one game during my practices with Spider-Ham, and it was my very first one that I played against Mysterio, and that's what happened. I was like, I can take this to face. I can take this face.
Right.
Oh wait, this this adds up. But no, cool. Ironheart would have been a fun one for this round, I think.
Yeah, well, he actually does give you a little bit of space to do that stuff, right? So I think you know, you Ironheart can be tricky because maybe some of the scenarios put on enough pressure that you can't just kind of wait around doing some of that stuff. But I think there's there definitely was enough space here. It was a tricky scenario, but you had some room early on.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Except for if you were playing Standard 2, Expert 2 and had to deal with Surge effects. So we saw Thor again was the top performing. I only grabbed the folks that had 100% win rates, and it turns out there was only one for each hero. So this was really easy. So we had Middleman of Flight 1 doing a Protection Thor, which I don't know that I've ever played Protection Thor. Have you?
Yeah, I actually love it because I love Ever Vigilant as a card. And
yes, he's got aerial.
Flex that. And then now with Repurpose, he does pretty decent as well. But Thor's got a slow start, but he actually has access to a ton of resources once he's set up. So again, that wiggle room early on here could have given him a lot of leeway.
Right. So in a way, he's not entirely unlike Iron Man or Ironheart in terms of you kind of start with a limited hand size, which can be really tricky. But once you get your board built out a bit, all of a sudden you have lots of resources and decent hand size and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You should sometime give Thor Protection a try. It's funny. It's like playing aggression protection a lot of times.
Right. Right. Unlike you, I don't necessarily just play protection for fun, but you know, maybe, maybe. I mean, I did play a crap ton of Repurposed Rocket at the con. So
that's true. But again,
you fell in love with that.
Repurpose is kind of like a hidden justice or aggression card that we tucked away into protection. So
yeah, I mean,
it feels totally different now to be able to play protection with something like Repurpose than doing just a basic defense.
Yeah, well, you know, and you know, for this current round that we're playing right now, I was also playing Gambit Protection, but the kind of, you know, block to take no damage and then do lots of great effects as a result. And that was really fun because, you know, Gambit's got a base defense of 3, so he's got pretty good access to do that. He never gets overpowered. If you get any sort of defense card down when you're blocking, there's never, almost never too much damage.
Yeah, for sure. I love seeing that 3 defense stat when a hero gets announced.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, there's another new toy for protection.
Right, where I just like seeing 2 thwart. That's all I want. I always want to see 2 thwart. And that's actually been the story of this current round is, you know, like the difference between the heroes who have access to 2 versus 1.
I believe it, yeah.
And then as mentioned, Jarrett was playing Iron Man in Justice and had a deck that was built around trying as best as he could to stay in Alter Ego and really build up his main kit pretty quickly. You played quite a bit of Justice Iron Man at the con.
Yeah, that's what I took through the campaign.
Yep.
And there was actually similarities to this deck from what I was running, just geared more toward multiplayer. But Iron Man, that Alter Ego Iron Man can really crank out some cards because between Moon Girl, Nick Fury, Futurist pulling an extra card, once you have Pepper Potts out and getting to double resources, yeah. It's just like, oh, and Ingenuity now is out. And so like just being able to like really build up that Alter Ego resource. And then by the time you turn to Iron Man, you're still, you know, cranking really strong on resources. So it's fun. It is a lot of fun. And it doesn't feel, when you have some flexibility, it doesn't feel like there's any pressure getting set up. But that usually is in multiplayer. Here, I imagine there was a bit of sweating in those early rounds as you tried to get a couple of the setup going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things that's neat, because it's, so this was a shield build, by the way, and one of the neat things about the shield builds is global logistics is an action, not a hero action. So if you can get some shield cards down, you can kind of set yourself up to know if it's safe to stay in Alter Ego going into a second round and stuff like that too. which I really like.
Oh yeah. Now this is I might have to play around with this a little bit because this looks like a really fun way to run Iron Man, and I can see how Jarrett was able to leverage this to get some good scores.
But again, to be clear, on Standard 2 Expert 2.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the added difficulty.
And then Hulk, we had, as you mentioned, was freeze-dried Strahd, whose deck was called I Hate Hulk and Wanna Die. And, this is lots of doing stuff back to the villain in response. So preemptive strike, return the favor, things like that. But also defiance, like you had. And the very brave bait and switch, which is an event, a thwart event that is the villain attacks you, remove four threat from the main scheme. Because Hulk has terrible access to thwarting, so you really need something that does it. So instead you get attacked.
Yeah, I was looking at this deck, kind of cracks me up because this is one of those cases where I'm like, man, there people like when people can pilot their decks, it is so cool because yeah, like bait and switch, you're trading that attack for threat removal, which that is a trade-off. Mysterio doesn't hit super hard, but again, that builds up, and then yeah, return the favor as well, where you're revealing extra treachery cards to get that extra damage. But I can see where those can be leveraged and offer really good decision points throughout the game. So yeah, that is interesting. Lots of green.
Yeah, a lot of green. 31 events.
Oof. Yeah. Oh, I'm just glancing through. Counterpunch is one of my favorite cards in protection, and Hulk is just perfect for that. Yeah, tons of events. To the Rescue is a great way, is in here. That's a great way to, really terrible card, usually, in terms of your efficiency, but when it answers the question, like the problem you have, which in Hulk's case is threat removal, it works well.
And then finally Captain America, which is Ndaliti, in Flight 2, playing a leadership, go all out, lots of Avengers allies, because you're allowed to now. And then in this case, so go all out for those that don't remember, this is the one where it's 2 cost 1, has a requirement of paying an energy as part of the cost, and then exhaust your hero, deal damage to an enemy equal to the total of your hero's thwart, attack, and defense values. And Cap has pretty good stats, but he also has things like he can play his Fearless Determination card that cycles itself and adds one to the thwart. And so he has ways of kind of just boosting up his stats a little bit as he goes anyway.
No, that's he seems like a really good platform for go all out, especially they're running morale boost in here to get those big stat boosts, strength in numbers to be able to leverage those allies for that card draw. And then because Standard 2 wasn't making them suffer enough, a symbiote is in here.
I know. I love
What
it. I love it. Yeah, I haven't really played a go all out deck, but I think I would probably like to give it a go somewhere. Again, kind of when we have these opportunities of just really being able to be kind of single-minded in your deck building, which you can do in the big multiplayer games.
Yeah. Oh, that looks like fun.
But this was actually like a successful Destiny solo, so hey,
Yeah.
more power to you, Ndaliti. So I don't know, of those things, was there anything that really jumped out at you as especially clever inclusions or tech in any of these?
Trying to think through again some of the ones we looked at. Nothing jumped out wholly for the tech. Like lots of people were using the same things, defiance, stuns. And so it is clever usage, but it was all around. So I don't know that anyone jumped out for clever tech specifically on deck building. But if we want to stretch that a little bit, I'd give it to Wayner for letting that shifting apparition sit out as his excess resource generator.
So just really solid tactics, right? Cool. Yeah, that was fun. I think, it's really complicated to try to cover obviously this many heroes and decks and stuff like that. So Thank you, listener, for sticking with us while we are looking at those. Because when we're looking at it, it's really interesting, but it's also a bit hard to communicate some of the things that we're noticing. Of the highest performers, just to highlight a couple other things. Freeze-dried Strahd had a 4.3 turn average and only two allies. And Kikita Jamie, who's playing Ironheart, had a 9.3 turn average. So we see, kind of this full spectrum of pretty quick to pretty slow, right? Ironheart does take a little bit of build, for example.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent spread, and just all around. I mean, the fact that we have a 4 round 2 ally deck, we have someone pulling 12 allies on 9 rounds. Yeah.
Very fun. Okay, Astrodar, thank you so much for joining me this week and being my con buddy. We played a crap ton of games together. Not all our games, but a crap ton of them.
Yeah, no, it was fun getting to get some of those games in with you guys, and I was so sad when I had to come home and couldn't wake up and play Marvel Champions all day.
I was actually surprised I wasn't a little bit sick of it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we'd crank out some games, and even once the con was done, everyone would go back to the hotel and play games in the lobby. And no, I think I was more hyped at the end of the con, more hyped for Marvel Champions than I've been in a long time.
Yeah, I. Well, go ahead, sorry.
I was gonna, so I was a little surprised. I thought I would have been a little worn out after that many games.
Yeah. I was really motivated to think about deck building, kind of with some of the ideas that I had seen or things I hadn't seen at all, just kind of being like, oh, I wonder if I could make this sort of thing work. I didn't really see anybody do that sort of thing.
Same, yeah, getting to see some like heroes that I'm like, oh, I really want to explore that. Or again, like you said, just tactics people's used or deck building they did that was like, oh, that would be fun to explore and to play. And it was good. No, it was exciting stuff and left me feeling really good for Marvel Champions as a whole.
Yes, well, thank you to all the organizers for a really, really fun event, and everybody else that was out there, and those that were contributing from at home, all those sorts of things. And thank you for joining us on the road to nowhere. We'll see you next time.
Bye.